Hello, I'm Helen King. I'm Professor of Classical Studies at the Open University, and I'm joined today by John Harrison, who's an applied psychologist and also a PhD student in the Department of Classics here. Thanks very much for coming, John.
Pleasure. Thank you, Helen.
So today we're thinking about vision, and we're trying to think about how the ancient Greeks and Romans thought about sight, but also about how modern knowledge of sight helps us with that. And I want to start with one of the most, to me, weird images from the ancient world, a very famous one, Homer's epithet for the sea, the wine-dark sea.
Mm.
What on earth is that about? How can the sea be the colour of wine?
Something I've agonised over too, and I think anybody that's encountered it must have thought that's a very curious reference. And I suppose there's a variety of possibilities. One of the things I always reach for quite early on is some metaphorical use of language. And something that comes up a lot is often synesthetic thought is usually just metaphor. So symphonies are black and Keats is purple. And I wondered if maybe that was one of the reasons why the sea might be wine dark.
So can you just unpack that a bit? How would that work? What does synesthesia mean?
So synesthesia is a union of sensation, literally. And the individuals that we've worked with in the past tend to have a coloured hearing variant. There are other combinations.
So they hear something and they hear it as red?
Yeah, it's one of those interestingly ineffable experiences, I think. So one of the revelations from synesthetes is that they've always assumed that everybody had this. And it's only at some point in their life where they've said, I have a teacher, Mr. Brown, but that's wrong because he's green. And their parents look at them oddly, or one of their friends, and then they explain that when they hear certain words, they see certain colours.
And is that a genuine phenomenon throughout human history? Are people always going to be, some of them, hearing in colours?
Yeah, I think we can make that assumption. I suspect that humans have changed very little in the last two millennia. There is some evidence that synesthesia is an inherited condition, and I think we might reasonably assume that's always been the case.
So if Homer says the sea is wine dark, he's actually thinking the sea is in some way like wine?
Yes, I think that might be either at a semantic level or a perceptual level. I mean, one of the things we're not sure of, I suppose, is quite what colour the wine he was thinking about might actually have been. And if it was, you know, a typical colour for Greek wine of that time, then I would suspect that it was a reasonable metaphor to pitch. But I suspect there are other explanations too. And at the very extreme, maybe, you know, Homer, in spite of being the blind poet, might have had some colour deficiencies if he did have any kind of vision.
So could Homer have been colourblind in our terms?
I think it's a possibility, yes. I mean, if you've got a form of colourblindness where you're having trouble picking up green, I think a red-coloured wine might look a sort of yellowish-brown, and that seems to me consistent with the idea of what the sea might look like.
So we've thought a bit about synesthesia and mixing up the senses, and we've thought a bit about colourblindness as a diagnosis, potentially. Mm. What other explanations have people come up with for this wine-dark sea image?
Well, it might be related to the use of language also. So, colour and its colour term use across different languages varies very substantially. I think in English, we sort of have 11 principal colour terms, but there's very good evidence that other languages tend to focus on a much more reduced level of language terms. And I think if you're talking about something being dark, and this is one of the analogies that we have from language, is you could say that it's dark like a leaf. So that's implying a sense of greenness, but also a sense of darkness too.
So you wouldn't take seriously any of the more empirical explanations that by the time the Greeks had watered down their wine, it would have ended up looking more greenish?
Well, I think we're spoilt for choice here, aren't we? We have such a number of hypotheses to pursue that and any of them might be reasonable.
Or perhaps just on a really stormy day, it looked very dark.
I suppose ultimately the colour of the sea is a reflection largely of what's above it. So yes, that's distinctly possible, isn't it?
So we've got loads of explanations for wine dark sea. Can I just ask you about one other colour term which always baffles me? And that's chloros, which tends to be translated green.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this very famous poem by Sappho, in which she describes the symptoms when she suffers from love and how she goes all sort of hot and sweaty and clammy and her ears hum and her heart's racing and so on. And she says that she's more chloros, more green, more whatever, than grass.
Mm.
What's going on with that one?
Yeah, I think we're necessarily in the area of speculation, but I think there are, again, analogous situations. So I think of Keats as a good example. So for Keats, the colour of passion is purple.
Oh, okay.
And he talks about Porphyro has the idea of sneaking into Madeline's chamber to watch her undress on the Eve of St. Agnes. And the thought creates purple riot in his heart, which is always one of the lines I love from it. But I think also seems to me the same sense that I'm getting from Sappho when she talks about the sensation of being in love. And I wonder if her use of chloros in the context of that situation is a legacy of that heightened state of arousal that she finds herself in when she's in love.
That's interesting, because chloros can also mean sort of dewy, fresh colour, sort of spring, I suppose. Anything to do with newness and just freshness and sap rising and all those sorts of things. So mm-hmm. it could fit in with what you're saying there about that heightened arousal. Everything looks fresh
right.
in some way. That's really interesting.
I think the case of synesthesia is interesting because it's in neuroscience, you usually learn a lot more about normal human behavior when you look at extreme cases, the people that have a supra level of performance and people that have some sort of level of impairment. And the impairment is always very interesting in the context of our understanding of vision. But I think synesthesia is a good focus for saying something that we know about everybody, the idea that your senses interact. So the interaction of sensation has some very unpredictable but some very interesting interactions.
Thank you very much for that, John. I hadn't realised that we still don't really understand an awful lot about perception, and particularly how the brain sees colour. So that's been really useful. Thank you.